accession number 19094, Reel 2.
Major Patterson, Reel 2.
We searched for infiltrators in the rear areas when we were out of the line. This was interesting as you got to know how the locals lived, especially on the small farms and that at the work there. And there was a lot of infiltration of them getting through that, and they did disturb the locals and quite a lot.
Were these well-organized forces, these infiltrators?
No, they usually worked individually.
But were they in uniform or in
disguise? No, they dressed the same as the normal Korean. They probably, when coming through the lines, they might have been in uniform of some kind, but I doubt it. We never actually caught anybody at all. Certainly our company never caught anybody. But earlier on in the campaign, before we went there, when the Chinese came into the war, there was a terrific amount of these people got through in that. And as they were pushing the civilian population to the south, they were walking with them. And in fact, they were carrying weapons, and they had the weapons sometimes in the children's carriages and whatnot, covered by blankets and what have you, that sort of thing like that. And this is what caused all the problems in the south at that time. That would be in the early 50-51, at the beginning of the campaign.
Any other experiences you had in this first position in the line?
No, but a lot of rain. And we found then, of course, again, the inevitable that the dugouts weren't as good as what they would have liked. Because with these dugouts, you can sandbag them as much as you want and, put as much wooden beams across them and that, and rocks and what have you. When the rain comes, it will seep through. And if the dugouts are not properly maintained, there can be a death trap, because they will collapse on top of you.
Did you have any such accidents?
No, we didn't. We had learned our lesson, the first time going in the line, that this sort of thing does happen. And then later on in the campaign, we were getting these dugout beams, the wood for the beams and that, already cut, great big widths, and alters a certain dimension, like building a house sort of thing in that. You dug your hole and all these beams were clearly cut to the right size. And they would be a foot square. Really, really huge things. And the poor old porters had the difficult job getting these up the line sort of thing in that, and getting them put together. But the digging was all done by the jocks themselves, and they proved to be first class, because you could waterproof the top of the beam, with a thick not a canvas, but some sort of a sheeting in that, and then you're sandbagging, and then your rocks and sandbagging again, and make it as high as you to make it bomb proof. These other older dugouts, they were splinter-proof, but they weren't bomb-proof.
You mentioned the porters there. Can you tell me more about their role?
The porters were they did all the hard work. A lot of your positions were up high on the top of the most skyline defence, your trenches, and they would bring up the meals on the H-frames or V-frames, whatever you call them, on the back, and that in itself up a steep hill is, you know, it's a very hard job in that, and they were very hard working indeed, very hard working. And they were under they were looked after by a sort of a, you know, a porter sergeant major, you would say, who was in charge. He was a Korean himself, and but they worked very hard, very hard. So they, you know, took up rations, ammunition, anything else that was required, and carried they would carry down casualties if there was, you know, stretcher cases, down to the admin area at the rear of the position, where you could get an ambulance or a helicopter in to gazabak them back to a field hospital or somewhere like that.
And was it your job to liaise with this porter sergeant major?
If we wanted anything there, I mean, they knew their job to, you know, they'd been there with other units as well, and that, and they knew exactly what they had to do and that, and so we had no trouble with them at all. I think the only thing I can remember with them, one very, very cold night, we had a number of casualties happen during the night, and we required, you know, to get them down. And I sent someone for the porters, and they said that he came back, whoever I sent, I can't remember who it was, they said they were all feeling sick. So I went down the hill, fuming along to the porters' lines and that, and you know, bust into where their accommodation was and whatnot, and I soon got them up the hill again, put it that way. And got the, you know, they may have been sick, but I think it was because it was a bit too cold. But we got them down the line. They got the, you know, the casualties down the line. That was the main thing. Gave them a bit of praise after. They were quite happy about it.
You mentioned all this rain. Yes. What season was that occurring?
You had the short, they had the long rains and the short rains. You had rains round about the early part of the year, but it was rather like the monsoon breaking. You know, you got all this, it would the tremendous heat and that, and then it would suddenly burst, and that down it would come, and then you were sloshed about there and mud all over the place, and the Murrum roads and along trenches that you had to be very, you know, make sure that your trenches were, you know, your drainage was there, so they would run away, otherwise you'd be, you know, you were up to the ankles as it was, but you could be up to the knees if you didn't let it go. So that was continual maintenance of that on the heavy rains. And the short rains, again, weren't very much better. But the roads to these positions were all done by the Royal Engineers, the sappers. And they cut out these roads round the rear of the hills, and when you had this heavy rain, that you get this subsidence if they weren't properly drained. So we did have cases of vehicles going over the side.
What did you think of the caliber of the enemy?
The Chinese, they were very, very good at night fighting. They did most of the, you know, their stuff at night. And considering that they had the might of the American Army and the Commonwealth Division there, that and with all the, you know, the experience and ammunition, or not ammunition, but the weapons and whatnot that they had, that they really did put up a good show. You must, you know, give praise where praise is due. But the nearly positive that they were using dope, because you could, you know, you've found a opium seed and discarded the Chinese cigarette packets, and the smell of them was dreadful, and especially any other dead gnat. Oh dear, dear, it really did reek, and I'm sure it was because they would run round in circles on the attack sort of thing, you know, chasing backwards and forwards, and then they suddenly stopped dead, and that was obviously wearing off. And as I say, that with this dreadful smell about when I was nearly sure that was the case, that dope was being used, because you don't come charging through when an oncoming shelling an enemy position. You usually, when you go to do the attack, or when you do the final sort of barrage before the troops go in, before you go in behind it, you have this gap. The shelling stops, the troops move in with the bayonet. Not with the Chinese. The shelling stopped, they were on the edge of the trenches jumping in. And if you haven't got something inside you, there must be something wrong with them. But this did happen on occasions.
But what specifically were their skills at night fighting?
Inasmuch as the night fighting is always a very delicate matter. When I say delicate, you've got to be really, the very good troops, because anything, all sorts of things can happen on a night attack. And they built, dug out in front of their own positions, a lot of caves where they used to muster the troops in there before an attack took place. And so that there were, as soon as the trumpets went, they used to blow these little trumpets. As soon as the trumpets sounded, they were there ready to, enter against the enemy, that was us, right away. And they could put up the shelling was tremendous as well, really tremendous. And as I say, that we had a case of a hand-to-hand fighting in the forward platoon position, which was a bit of a melee more than anything else, but they gave as good as what they got, and that was no rifle bayonet pick shoveled a lot whatever came to hand, and but they didn't, they run in the latter end. The other amazing thing with Chinese is that after a battle, in every case, they took away the wounded and the dead. It was very rarely that if a dead Chinese were left. They seemed to, I suppose it was part of their religion or something that they did for the sending back to the families or whatnot, but they did this. Always took their, made sure that they took their wounded back and the dead.
Did the Black Watch not do the same?
No, well, when you're in the middle of a battle sort of thing, and that waits till the end of it, then you bring them in. If you can, and but they seem to be, as more or less as it happened, they were doing that, and this is why you know that on one occasion there were a couple of Chinese that they were wounded, and they were left there, and they went back to pick them up. The troops, they went back to pick them up, and they'd gone. Well, I mean, they were bad enough wounded to be able to do anything for themselves, But the whoever came to take them away, I mean, that was right in the middle of the bloody battle. Because you could get a lot, you know, you would probably get a lot of information from someone who was wounded and that, and but they'll say this is what happened with them.
Yeah. Was there any hatred of the enemy, or did you have an attitude of respect, or what?
They used to have this broadcasting, and you know, they used to broadcast and that, the you know, saying that the we were losing the war, and that the about wives and families and that sort of thing, you know, the sort of Lord Ho Ho thing and that, and but the. What happened then, that the we would send out patrols, and the jokes would take out little bits of paper with, you know, with messages for them, and stick them in front of their positions and that, then get back as quick as they can. No fighting patrol, just a case of tit for tat. And then they were, the next day they would be pointing out to the mates, that message is mine, because you could see them, you're that close. So that was the... They had a habit of the Chinese of showing themselves in the position, you know, sort of standing up in that. And we were always advised, if they did that sort of thing, fire at them and let them know that they, you know, that we're ready for them if they want to come along.
What kind of messages did the jocks send?
I can't remember now exactly what it was, but I would have said it was something that would be quite unprintable with them. But they did do this, and I had a bit of a laugh with them. But I say that you had to admire the Chinese for the you know, the bravery in a sense. Again. I suppose that they were like everybody else, like the rest of us. That, you know, you're frightened on these occasions. When the adrenaline starts to flow, you get a wee bit better. But the fright is there all the whole time, because you know, it's one of these things that happens in all wars with everybody. There's no you know, brave men are not they're not made, they're born.
Did you ever capture any of the enemy?
We did, but the ones that we captured, they all died on the way back. They were wounded. And they did try to get them back by a helicopter, and a Kazakh them back there, but they were dead on arrival wherever they went to. So they couldn't, couldn't get anything out of them.
Were you keen to capture them?
Yes, we did send out patrols and that, but we never brought anybody in. We never brought anybody at all. A snatch patrol is a very difficult thing. Very few units say managed to, you know, bring in prisoners, but one or two of them did. But we certainly never brought anybody in as a snatch patrol itself.
Would the Chinese try to do the same to capture your men?
No, it never happened with us. No, we never. In the hook position, we had these. The Americans had these listening devices along the trenches. You could hear what was going on in front of you. But again, they didn't. They weren't all that great, because the long grass in front of it. If there was a bit of a breeze, all you would get was the noise of the grass blowing in the wind. So that wasn't all that successful.
What did these listening devices consist of?
Sort of microphones, that sort of thing. That's the only way we describe it. That, and they were laid out in front of the positions and that, and they could pick up something, and if there was a lot of noise. The idea being that if anybody did approach, that with the flares that were there as well, that at least you would know that there was something on the move.
Now, can you Can we go back to the chronology, and can you take me step by step through what happened next, please?
From that, I better watch what I'm doing there. From that position there, they're back at the line, and again, that was a back for a good rest, good food, and training, and they could sort of wash and brush up, showers and that sort of thing, and the cinema, that was there. So that gave them a good dress, but at the same time it kept them on the move, got myself sorted out, and general administration. But the idea was to make sure that they could enjoy themselves without making a fool of themselves.
And then?
When you went back into the line, you would go back into a different sector. And normally, you changed over in the when the moonlight night sort of thing, and that, so you could see a bit better. And you were moved by the into position by the military police. They directed all traffic and that up to the areas where you went to, and guides were sent up from the companies before you went, so they were there to meet you and again to take your platoons and that into the positions. The guides would come from their own platoons anyway, so that was usually done without any problems. If you got a wet night, it was a pretty ghastly thing to do, just the same.
What do you remember happening next?
We did this two or three different positions, and an episode that it happened, I think it was worth talking about, was on a feature called Yongdong. It's a very high feature in that, and with a very pointed summit to the hill, overlooking the Imjin River, overlooked the Hook position. And, in Korea, the dugouts now were always bothered with rats, lots of rats. And, of course, where there's food and that in these circumstances, you'll always get that vermin. Anyway, I remember one night with the company, the company commander, 2IC, and myself, we used to do 4 hours on, 8 hours off on the command post. That's on the telephone and wireless and that sort of thing. And anyway, I'd finished my stint, and I think it would be about the dog watch. Anyway, I staggered out of the command post, and that it was belting down with rain and along the muddy trench, and my own dugout was just down the trench from the command post, and had a sheet or a some sort of a sheeting anyway over the door, over the front of the dugout, and got into the dugout, and we had these small oil lanterns, like you see on the farm and that sort of thing, and they were ideal for the that at night and that. So I lit that, and I had a couple of letters in my pocket that I just received, and that, so I thought, I'll read these before I kick down in that, because you never took your boots or anything of that off when the overnight. I lay down in that, and so anyway, I lay down on the top of my hammock and that, and I was just starting to read the letter and that, and suddenly there was a swish of this curtain I had at the door and that, and the squeal and a rush, a black and white and something else and that, and the next thing I was sort of lying back, and next thing there's a ruddy great rat on the right of my chest there, and blood all over the place, And I lay there. I couldn't move. And the thing expired. It died there and then. And this thing in the corner of the dugout, this black and snarling object, and that wildcat, had chased it in there. It had run up to where the light was, the rat, run across my chest. I caught it there. It killed it, or more or less, you know, it just died there, I say. And then it couldn't find its way out. And it just sort of curved back, and that, oh, what a sight, what a sound. I say, I was petrified with it. Anyway, the wind blew again, and it shot out. And I gingerly, you know, picked its rat up and threw it over the side. But I got a fright. I certainly got a fright. That was Yong Dong. I went along to the command post and I showed them my bloodstain. They wouldn't believe me. They must have been dreaming. But this happened with you get a lot of wildcats. That the villages that had been overrun in the early stages of the campaign, that the animals or the pets and that sort of thing, they were all left there, and of course they run wild in that, and they used to cause a lot of a disturbance in these listening devices. If you got one of them, you know, moving about in there, that would give you a sound in that, and but that one was certainly wild, all right. But I say that you got these rats and that. We used to line the dugouts with the ration box covers, you know, cardboard and that, to insulate for the heating and that. And you would get to lay down to have a kip and that, and get in your sleeping bag if you could get in it. And then it would start. I'm sure they were all wearing hobnail boots. They would run along the roof and that, and the cardboard. But they weren't the worst of the vermin. Mice was the thing that you had to be very careful about. On the hills in Korea, it's all low scrub. And in wet weather or that, or anywhere at all, or if you're going to dry anything off, you're out the line or in the line, or a reverse slope or anything like that, where you can dry stuff out. That you had to be very careful laying blankets on this on these low bushes, because these mice would get on the blankets, and it carried a mite on it. And these mites were fatal. The Americans lost quite a number of their troops, and they died through it. So you had to be very careful. You're far better to hang your blanket up between a couple of poles, or to dry stuff out, as against laying it on bushes.
But the back watch weren't affected.
I think we had a couple of cases of people who reported sick with it, if I can recall. But they were caught in time. They were caught in time. The Americans lost quite a few. They were strange people, the Americans, really. They're very nice, but we got on very well with the Marines, who were